Yes, the captain of the Pinafore. That's Gilbert and Sullivan, of course, from the HMS Pinafore. Well, we've got the captain of the Gilbert and Sullivan Players, the guy who founded them, who thought of the whole idea, and who has been their music director and artistic director and their chief cook and bottle washer for all these years. His name is Albert Bergeret, and he's on the phone with us now. Albert, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
That's great. Now, first, let's get out of the way the reason that we're having you on this particular week. You guys are busy doing kind of a little cabaret thing. So tell
us
about
that. Right, and actually we're doing a little takeoff on the number we just heard there. We have a leader of the cabaret instead of a captain of the Pinafore in our show.
Oh, cute. Okay. And so what is it? It's at the Triad, right?
It's at the Triad on 72nd Street, Thursday night at 7 and Sunday afternoon at 5:30. We're having a great time doing something we call a little twist. I've got a little twist.
Mm-hmm.
Take off on the title, I've got a little list from the Mikado, where we're taking a little bit of a different look at Gilbert and Sullivan repertory and some musical theater pieces that we think relate in some way, either textually or musically, and having a little fun with our respect for the material, but giving it a little twist. And every number has a little bit of a separate and unique perspective.
Well, you sometimes do that. I mean, you're very respectful to the material, and
absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we say in this cabaret act is that, look, we're not trying to take anything away from what we do with our full company. It's just a chance to do something a little different. We believe in the material as it was written, but we also believe that it's not meant to be museum-oriented, that it's not static, that performing art is something that has to communicate with an audience, and that it has to be kept fresh. Our mission statement says, giving vitality to the living legacy of Gilbert and Sullivan, which includes both the genre itself and those things that have followed it. It's it leaves it a little bit broad, but it also tells you something. We want to bring it, keep it fresh, alive, and communicative with a modern audience, even though we do the material as it was written with occasional twists. Sometimes
right.
A couple of lyrics are changed if we see in our full productions, but basically we're true to the original intent of the authors.
I've seen you do that just a little bit in some of the times of the actual shows that you've done.
Well,
not often. Like someone will, there's playfulness, there's the occasional anachronism.
Exactly. We try to make it so that it communicates with the audience. If there's an obscure reference that the audience that's in the theater at the time will find confusing, we'd like to change that and take that confusion out of the equation. Sometimes it's not possible. Gilbert is very clever with his lyrics, and sometimes it's more topical than others. But many times, particularly in the Mikado, where there are lists of potential victims for Coco, the Lord High Executioner, or lists of Pooh Bah, the Lord High Everything Else, lists of his offices, or the Mikado's lists of punishments that fit the crime, those references to 19th century institutions and things are sometimes just not really as understandable. So we like to update those and give them a little bit of a punch that makes them communicate with the audience. But the music...
Well, what are some examples recently of, like when you did Mikado or Pinafore, where you changed specific
lyric? Pinafore doesn't have a lot, but I've got one that's beautiful.
Yeah.
In Pinafore, when it was first written, the telephone had just been invented. And there's a very somber moment close to the end of the show where four characters come forward in a minor key, sing in four-part harmony. He'll hear no tone of the maiden he loves so well, no telephone communicates with his cell. Well, at that point, that would have been a very humorous reference, but it's done so somberly and seriously, most audiences now would just think, we change one word, no cellular phone communicates with his cell, and all of a sudden it's back to what was originally intended. It's a commentary on some part of contemporary life that doesn't make sense, or that makes a twist on what the words themselves say. That's the one time in there's very little else in Pinafore that really needs to find that. That's an opportunity that presents itself. It's not like we're going out trying to find places to change the original works, because we think they really do play in their intent. It's just when there is an opportunity that presents itself, we do not shy away from taking advantage of it.
Yeah, I'm curious of some of the names that you transposed in Mikado.
In Mikado, well, there's something new every day. Each performer comes up with their own. When Coco has a list of victims, whether it's the current governor's scandal or the current campaign that's being political. I mean, this material, one of the things that's unique about Gilbert and Sullivan is not just romances. It's the political satire and the satire on human nature and institutions that tend to be repeated from one generation to another. You don't have to know, for instance, in HMS Pinafore that W.H. Smith, the founder of W.H. Smith Bookstores, the British equivalent of Barnes & Noble, was the man who was made the first Lord Lord of the Admiralty by Queen Victoria and the British Parliament, and it was something of a joke that he knew nothing about the Navy because he actually thought it was a great joke himself. He called himself Pinafore Smith for the rest of his life. But you don't have to know that to appreciate that Sir Joseph is this stuffed shirt the character you love to hate, the character who goes around professing, you know, his superiority because he knows nothing about the Navy, and therefore that makes him the ruler of the Queen's Navy, and stick close to your desks and never go to sea, and you all may be rulers of the Queen's Navy. The humor still rings true even if you don't know the historical background.
Well, I mean, we've had a president for the past 8 years who doesn't know anything about being president, so it still can't ring true right there.
I would imagine that W has been in a few of our satirical comments along the way, absolutely.
Now, you've been doing this since 1974.
That's right. We're 35 years old.
Good Lord. How did it start?
I started out with a bunch of friends from Barnard College and some opera workshops and church choirs where I sang. But Barnard G&S was really the impetus for it. A friend of mine from Barnard College, Gilbert and Sullivan, our student at Columbia, did some 20 shows over 10 years with the Barnard College, Gilbert and Sullivan Society, which in those days had a lot of alumni participation as well as undergraduate participation, and was all student-run and did not take money from the Student Activities Association. And it was sort of a little microcosm, how to run a business on a college campus basis. And I learned an awful lot about the material and about running a company from doing that and being part of it. I started in the chorus and worked my way up to leads and directing and designing and business managing and all sorts of things. So I got a handle on it. And then when a friend said, you know, some of us really ought to get out of the way of the undergraduates and move on, I said, well, you know, I'm interested, but I'm not interested in community theater. I'd like to try to form something that has a professional basis. And even though we had no money, I'm fond of saying that our first season was a budget of $35 and everything else was begged, borrowed, and stolen to get us out there on the street. I think we spent $35 on Xeroxing flyers that summer. That was about it. Everything else was borrowed, and we got out and started doing the Mikado in the back of a Winger wagon at block parties around the city. It started with that, and last year we reached over $2 million in our annual budget. So
nice.
We've gone somewhere in the time and figured that we've raised $5 million from individuals in the last $1 million in individuals in the last 5 years. That was our most recent milestone. But we also earn a lot of money from both ticket sales and from traveling around the country and performing. We get performance fees for all sorts of things, full performances. We also have a group called the Wandering Minstrels, which is a quintet, usually a quintet, but sometimes fewer, which can perform in libraries. We've been there on Long Island performing in libraries on numerous occasions, and over at Hofstra. And we do programs as well as our full company with smaller ensembles where the budget size is appropriate and where it's appropriate to do a less formal, fully staged production.
Do they do bar mitzvahs and weddings?
Absolutely. I can't say that a bar mitzvah has much relevance, but weddings definitely, and we've done funerals too, actually.
Wait a minute. No, come on. What do you do at a funeral?
I have a song to sing, a very melancholy song from The Yeoman of the Guard, which is a foreshadowing of a character's death.
Yeah,
and I sung it at memorial services where somebody says this was this person's favorite song. That was done. I remember doing that at a memorial chapel, Jewish memorial chapel once. Another time, I had been hired by a daughter to sing a version of the When I Was a Lad song we were just referring to from Sir Joseph, for a party celebrating the publishing of her father's lifelong work in pathology, as it turned out.
Yeah.
And then when he passed away a year or so later, she asked me to come back and sing it at the memorial service.
That's a nice little sideline. Yeah, I didn't realize that you sang, because when I see the
I perform with the smaller ensemble. I frequently sing as well. I've done both tenor leads and comic leads, pieces of things. I sometimes do a two-person show with a soprano. I've done lecture demos by myself.
Would you favor us? I wasn't expecting this, but since you can and do, could we get a little snippet of something? A little
acapella? I sort of did that already. I did, you know, stick close to your desks and never go to sea, and you all may be rulers of the Queen's Navy. Tell me if I'm going too fast for the radio. I mean,
I'm known
for going very fast. People say you speak very fast. I do Gilbert and Sullivan for a living. Like, how could I not?
Well, there may also be dead people listening. So for their memorial, you might want to give us a little of that sad Gilman song.
I have a song to sing, oh, sing me your song, oh. It is sung to the moon by a lovelorn loon who fled from the mocking throng, oh. The song of a merry man, moping mum, whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum, who sip no sup and who crave no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
That's nice.
Enough of that.
Yeah, no, that's actually rather nice.
On a totally different subject, I want you to know one of my really best friends used to have two dogs, one named Gilbert, one named Sullivan.
Uh-huh.
And Sullivan passed away, but Gilbert's still around, and she adopted another dog, and now she has Mabel.
Sullivan and Mabel.
Mabel.
Mac and Mabel?
The one who's still around is Frederick.
Wait, who's Frederick? I'm sorry?
Oh,
Frederick,
yes.
Pirates of Penzance.
Right,
he only has a birthday once every 5 years.
Right.
So technically, he turned 21 in 1940, so he's still not of an age where he should be dead unless you want to count the real years.
It's only every four years.
He
was born on the 29th of February.
On the 29th of February, and you have to skip a few to count it, right? Because the turn of the century doesn't have a leap year.
That's right.
So
now, let me ask you, how many people, have you ever met people who have dogs named for Gilbert and Sullivan?
I have a major contributor who lives in Colorado who has Iolanthe and Ruddigore 1, 2, and 3.
Ruddigore 2. I just like the idea of Ruddigore 2 right there.
And they make contributions with those names for listening in the program.
If they give you money, they can name their damn dogs anything they want to. I feel. You know.
They come all the way from Colorado to see us. I saw them Thursday night at the cabaret opening.
Excellent.
Yeah, that is cool.
So there are a lot of people out there who do that. I think it's just so clever. I would love to have a dog.
I'm just happy that you guys have like $1 million in contributions.
Well, that was over 5 years.
We
have been primarily an earned income operation for many, many years, of which I'm fairly proud in some respects that we have generated the majority of the money from this company, and it's a not-for-profit corporation.
How about
from ticket sales and fees for services, which is what I'd rather do than ask for contributions. But in the world of not-for-profit theater and in the modern age, contributions are absolutely necessary to sustain our operation.
How about New York State and the federal government?
How shall I put it? The New York State Council gives us the same amount of money now or less than when we were at one-tenth of the budget.
Oh, okay.
So they give us a token every year.
Uh-huh.
It's a small amount, but it's really appreciated and it's helpful. The National Endowment turns us down every year.
Really?
Why do you think? Are you a not for profit?
Absolutely.
So why don't they? Why do you?
Have they once or twice have given us the minimum grant? But for 10 years or so, we have not received anything from the National Endowment. We're not American. We're not community. We're in New York.
Wait.
We're not Grand Opera. We're not. There's a certain sense that we're neither we don't have the sophistication of the classical music world, and we don't have the contemporary values of the theater world, and we're not American. So we don't qualify as being American in a sense.
Because Gilbert and Sullivan are not
British.
American.
It's British. It's considered English. So it falls into crack.
Are you from, where, are you Canadian? Where are you from?
No, I'm a New Yorker. My father was a Frenchman.
No, they're saying the product.
The product.
Yeah.
The material itself is considered. It falls in a crack between considerations. The theater people who come to see it think of it. Oh, that's that old hat stuff that doesn't really deserve to get the attention of our budget.
Oh,
so
that's
it
such
gets
a
sort
shame.
Of shunted aside on that. And on the other side, it's not considered grand enough and to be classic. It is, but.
Huh.
See it that way. I mean, one of my associates was brought up in prep school where the headmaster said children should be introduced to three things: the Bible, Shakespeare, and Gilbert and Sullivan. And we kind of feel that way about it. We think that it's a great way for kids to get interested in classical music and to listen to real legitimate singing. And at the same time, it's accessible to them. They understand it on one level. Maybe not catching all of the verbal sophistication, but it's a way to get language that they have to listen to in a different way than, hey, yo, man, what's up, you know? And the kids react, they respond positively to the caricatures on human nature that are intrinsic to these works. It's something that doesn't exist in any other genre, musical theater, opera. It's a really ingenious mix of this satire on the way people work. And one of the things, I think, somewhat unintentionally, Mr. Gilbert, they were both very much a product of a society, the Victorian society, that they were lampooning, but they really didn't want to give offense. So they went to great lengths to make sure that all of the barbs were not drawing blood. And therefore, the people who they were poking fun at could laugh at themselves It's a little bit like some of the late night shows with that do jokes on people who then,
yeah,
you know, they bring John McCain on the show after they've been poking fun at him for the last month or whatever, and, you know, have fun with him, and he laughs at the same jokes with them. There's that, but our sensibilities are much edgier these days. Because Gilbert was making his barbs less specific, less bloodthirsty, they become couched in terms that are generic and terms that therefore transcend the politics of the day and become political, but yet not specifically rooted in any particular time. I find that that's a kind of a unique value that these works have that I don't think anybody else has ever replicated.
Yeah, that's very true.
Well, yeah, because I'm thinking when you mentioned that, like maybe the David Fry records of the 1970s where he's lampooning Nixon, and they're amusing, but they're basically forgotten because
it was
Nixon, you know.
But I mentioned that there was a great, great cabaret act called McBird. I mean, it was about Lady Bird and the Johnsons and everything. But you know, 5 years later, it didn't have any punch at all. It's totally unmemorable.
Ruining it in its time. By the way, I'm kind of wondering, do you have a favorite Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, and which one it would be?
Well, I was taught by John Reed, the great star of the Dolly Cart for over 25 years, who was our guest artist for 6 years, that any time anybody asked him what his favorite was, it was the one that he was performing that night, which to some extent is true for me, too. I love them all on different ways, but I will profess a personal favorite, Isle Anthe.
Really?
That is the prettiest music, I think. That was the first operetta of theirs that I saw you guys do.
Well,
it was the first time I went to Nygasp, and I thought it was lovely.
Well, the music is fine, and I love the March of the Piers is perhaps the best chorus ever written for men. And there are other things that are just wonderful about the score. But the thing that I think in particular attracts me to it is the character of the Lord Chancellor, who gets to be both the silly comic character with wisecracking remarks and witty witticisms, and also gets the moment where the wife that he hasn't seen for 25 years, who he thought was dead, shows up in front of him, and he really still loves her, and he says, "I will see thou livest." And you can't get a more dramatic, real moment. And the fact that that character gets to play the father, he has this fatherly attitude. There's a really well-drawn character there. And in the terms of an allegory that one of our guest artists, a fellow named John Astin, who might sound familiar, you know, as in Gomez.
Yeah,
I saw him do...
Okay, John Astin, Patty Duke Astin, whatever. Yeah. John was our guest star 1 year. He did Pinafore with us.
Right.
And he had come to see our production of Isle Anthe that season just before he started working with us. And he pointed out to me, and it's something that's sort of self-evident, but here you have a wonderful allegory for the human condition again. The women, the fairies representing immortality, intellectuality, and what everybody desires to be ideally in their mind. And the peers representing the stupidity and the mundanity and the rootedness of your body and of human existence in reality. And then you have a character who's literally half of each. And Strephon is the everyman who is half a fairy and half a mortal. And he's stuck with literally, you know, his upper half is one or his lower half is the other. So it becomes this sort of, you know, a kind of an oversimplified, but this allegory for the human condition. The intellectual part that wants to be immortal that goes on, and the body that's stuck kicking behind.
Who are some of the other guest stars that you've worked on? I know Hal Linden.
Hal Linden was our most recent. Before that, we had Frank Gorshin, we had Pat Carroll, and perhaps most illustriously, Steve Allen.
So what did Steve Allen do?
Steve Allen did a title role on the Mikado with us, which he couldn't remember. Couldn't remember. He had little post-its all over the stage.
Well,
and in the dialogue, not to speak ill of the dead, but I think, you know, he knew at the time, too, that he was having trouble. He wanted to rewrite all the lyrics, and we were fine with that, except that then once he'd rewritten, we couldn't remember what they were. So we had people on stage saying, "Hey, boss, tell him about the execution." You know, it's like they had to tell him what the topic was next.
Oh,
he was
boy.
Still very funny,
no,
but it was excruciatingly difficult to get through a performance with the guy.
Oh, man. I sort of wish I'd seen that.
That would have been great. And I also like Pat Carroll.
Pat Carroll
was
a little buttercup. She sang it as a baritone. She also had a tendency to forget stuff, but didn't really learn the score properly.
No, but she'd be an ideal buttercup. I can see her.
She sang it an octave low. She sang it as a baritone.
Okay. Yeah, but, I mean, just the fact of her, and there's no more stolid human female. No
pleasing person with a good accent. Yeah, she was great.
So,
Who do you have coming up?
Right now we're sort of on a hiatus from our full productions because of financial problems. That's why we're doing a low-risk, low-yield in the Cabaret Act. Which, by the way, again, is this Thursday and Sunday. I've got a little twist, which we are
at the Triad,
a great
theater,
deal
but, yeah.
fun with the Triad on 72nd Street, just east of Broadway.
It's a great, the Triad is a great theater. Cause
great little place, beautiful little almost proscenium, but with just six people who fill it from side to side.
If people don't know, that's where Forbidden Broadway started.
That's where they started.
Remember Plaid was there for a while? Yeah, yeah.
Tons of stuff.
Bill Boggs is still there.
Oh, he's doing his thing out there, Bill Boggs.
Bill Boggs is still there. He was doing his show after us tonight, in fact.
Oh, very neat.
Yep.
We
don't have any guest artists lined up. And in fact, guest artists are a problem for us because they have a lot of trouble keeping up with the our knowledge of the material.
But did they bring in the crowds? Does it help?
It has helped in some ways, and in other ways it hasn't. It's been disappointing at other times, very disappointing.
Hmm.
You know, Steve Allen managed to mention that he was doing the Mikado in New York and never mentioned the name of the company and the various publicity things that he did.
He forgot.
Just forgot.
At the least
name
for one
in
New York.
Wants to mention it, whatever, for one reason.
Who would be your ideal guest?
I've been after Dick Van Dyke, but Dick Van Dyke has gotten too old, and he realizes that he can't learn the stuff. There are various other people who have also come to that conclusion. I would love to have done it with, we've got a reference to the Music Man in our cabaret, talking about the legacy of Patter and how Music Man was a show by Meredith Wilson with Patter in it, and one of the people that I'd always wanted to work with back in the day would have been Robert Preston. There are some people I think you can just sort of sense from their personas that they'd be a delight to work with, and there were others who might be appropriate for the material but who I would not have wanted to work with.
Patty LuPone's available now.
I don't think Patty would fit for GNS anyway, but Tony Randall was one of those who I would have loved. I had conversations with, in fact, about doing Gilbert Sullivan. He's a big opera fan. But in the long run, I don't know that he would have been...
He would have wanted to direct.
He wouldn't have wanted him. He wouldn't have been much fun to work with.
He could be prickly. He could. And I think we're waiting for the Mandy Patinkin Pinafore.
Mandy Patinkin's another one, actually. He's actually sort of a neighbor. His kids went to school around the corner here, and all kinds of connections with that. Yeah. But Mandy never was interested. He was interested in recording some of the songs. He put the Nightmare song from Iolanthe on his album, or one of his albums, anyway. Yeah. But I don't think he's ever been interested in actually playing one of the roles. He's very particular about what he wants to do.
So is it because of the financial thing, but even when you were in somewhat slightly better financial shape, when America was in better financial shape, you still sort of had to pull out either the Mikado or Pinafore.
We tend to pull out Pinafore, Pirates, and Mikado all the time in order to develop new audiences. And it's a real problem for us. Obviously, there's a limited repertory, and the fact that only three of them seem to have real good legs with the general public who aren't already fans. Now, we pull out others, which we try to do on a more long-term rotating basis. But it's a constant problem about having overexposed the three titles that we do, that we know we can use to generate interest, that are household words, if you will. When we go on tour, there's virtually nobody who wants to book anything other than Pinafore, Pirates, or Mikado.
I mean, not that that's bad, but you understand that puts you in something of an artistic box.
It's part of the great debate that's going on for us right now as to what our future is, whether we need to... Well, this cabaret act shows that we have some skills and some people who are pretty good at creating some new lyrics and new situations and putting something together. We've been talking for years about trying to create some sort of a piece that we could copyright that would be our own, that would be unique and different, but still be related to Gilbert and Sullivan. I just was thinking about that today again, thinking maybe this is the team that we're working with now that could do that for us. Although we have a connection to Rupert Holmes, whose brother sings with us. And I know Rupert, and I've been bugging him for about a year or two now to sit down and talk to me about another idea that he has. And it's just that he's just too damn busy, and we just haven't been able to get together on it. But
Or maybe Joe DiPietro. He tends to do pretty good jobs at shoehorning other people's songs into something else.
Yeah.
Well, that's just an idea.
Our primary mission is still to do the works.
Sure.
And we might want to do something other than Gilbert and Sullivan as our main, in part of our main thing. We did Of the I Sing by the Gershwins at one point.
Oh, really?
And back in 1990, we did that at Symphony Space.
Would you dip into Victor Herbert, or is that pushing the...
I don't know whether... It depends. I don't know. Whether it's the Flatermouse or...
Depends
the
what
Mary
Victor
Widow,
Herbert thinks about
it
being dipped into.
Or what it might be that would be... of interest. I think we could do any of those with the company that we have, but we are, in essence, a company still, and the Gilbert and Sullivan material is what we are built, what our company is built to do.
And you're still there. I mean, I'm sorry that you're not doing a season, but I'm glad that you're still doing what you do.
We're doing our first performances in California ever. We've got a booking out in Los Angeles in May. We're back at the Wolf Trap for the 14th year in a row at the end of May. We have 2 weeks of touring in the Midwest. In between, we have school workshops. We have our annual school workshop in Syosset there on Long Island.
Oh, cool.
We have two more workshops that we've just booked in Tenafly, New Jersey. Those are school residencies. The one in Syosset is a residency also, where we actually go into the school district and...
Well, schools are the only places where arts... schools in the education section are the only place where people can count on funding and money these days.
Well, it's true, but I don't want to see us become the company that's where the tail is wagging the dog either. We're still primarily performers, and one of the things that's refreshing about what we bring to the educational forum is that we are professional performers. We're not trained educators. So we bring to it a different perspective than the person who is trained in curriculum development.
Well, as I said, I'm just very glad that NIGASP, that's what
can
I have to
tell people what NIGASP is?
Well, that's New York Gilbert and Sullivan Players, although I must tell you that back in the early days, one of the first reviewers who said, NIGASP, New York, no, it's not an anti-smoking organization.
That's cute. All right, that's cute. It makes people remember NIGASP.
It's not the greatest acronym, but at times we've thought about the fact that if we're going to do something other than Gilbert and Sullivan, at some point maybe the name has to change, too.
Not yet.
We've got too much, 35 years invested in that name. It's kind of hard to change it. It's a brand all to itself.
True. Plus the website, NIGASP.org, for people who want to find out what the company is doing. And I do want to tell everybody, for a little piece, you can certainly please go to the Triad Theater for the next two shows that they're going to be doing of I've Got a Little Twist, but you can also catch two members of the New York Gilbert and Sullivan Players at the next StageBuddy.com live coming up. It's not this week. I think it's the week after, unless I'm mistaken. Is it this week? I forgot to write that down. Do you know?
I'm not sure what that is.
It's this live show.
It's a wonderful new thing that's happening on the corner of 42nd and 8th Avenue.
Well, not the corner. It's actually in a building. It's in the Times Square Arts Center. I host a variety program, a talk show, live in front of an audience that's also videotaped. And we have Broadway people and cabaret people and musicians and stand-up comedians. And two of your people, David Wannan and David Auxier.
Okay, those are the two Davids, the Twin Towers that are involved with this cabaret at the moment. They were just on another show together. So David must have set that up.
Yeah.
David is my managing director, works with me full-time in the office as well as performing.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, so it was second, or even it was the press, it might have been Beck Lee, the press agent who
Peter
worked,
Cromedy, probably.
Well, excuse me, Peter Cromedy, right.
Yeah, that's it.
And so anyway, if people want to see it, go to my website, because I'm not sure whether it's this coming Saturday or next that the Gilbert and Sullivan folks are there. I think it's this coming Saturday. Check them out, David Wannan and David Auxier from New York Gilbert and Sullivan Players, and we're very happy to have had in the neighborhood tonight with us, with our little list, Albert Bergeret. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.